If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, humanity's impact on planet Earth has a name, the Anthropocene. The start of Earth's human age can be pinpointed in the bottom sediments of a small Ontario lake.
If you ask someone to model what you would see in a sediment record based on the record of how many nuclear tests were being conducted in any given year, it would look precisely like the record at Crawford Lake.
But human beings have no control.
We're not at all dominating anything, especially not the Earth systems. If we were dominating, it would be much easier if we really had control over what we're doing. It would be much easier to, you know, counterbalance our impact. But we have no control, because the system is so much bigger than us.
And now we stand at catastrophe's door.
You know, there are so many pathways now to catastrophic outcomes on this planet. Whether something resembling human civilization makes it to even the end of this century, I think, is an absolutely open question. It's going to be very hard for humanity to avoid all of those, you might call them bullets, to dodge all the bullets that are coming our way.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Before launching in, a request. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. It's something human beings take for granted. The world is a very human place, covered by concrete and tall buildings, cars racing this way and that, food from all corners of the planet, some green space for us humans. Earth's human age has a name, the Anthropocene. Dutch chemist Paul Crutzen coined it 20 years ago. The Anthropocene, Crutzen said, should be declared a new epoch in Earth history, terminating the one we've been in for the past 12,000 years, the Holocene. Now, a panel of scientists is poised to confirm Crutzen's idea. I'm standing in a room at University College London in England, checking out an exhibit called Objects of the Misanthropocene, Unearthing Futures. The premise is simple. Fossil hunters, thousands of years in the future, have sent these objects back to us to warn us of what lies ahead. A dystopic world dominated by worms and cockroaches. Some of their time-traveling objects are shocking.
I mean, I haven't looked around fully, but there's some really interesting, there's like tins of human meat.
Simon Turner has reason to be intrigued. He's the secretary of the Anthropocene Working Group, a panel of the International Union of Geological Sciences. Its 14-year mission, now almost complete, defining the Anthropocene scientifically, when it began, and where humanity's impact on planet Earth is best observed in the rock record.
My favourite is called the Anthropocene Stratotype Specimen. It's a search for the golden spike, Dr. Roach's golden spike toolkit. And it made me laugh, because that's essentially my job. We are currently putting together how to identify the golden spike in geological deposits.
To be exact, that golden spike will be the thin sequence of layers in the bottom sediments of a bay or lake, or from an ice core, or peat bog, or coral reef, somewhere on Earth, where the telltale signs of human activity are best observed. Colin Waters is the chair of the Anthropocene Working Group.
Some of the sites that we've been looking at, you can see the annual sedimentation of layers, layer on layer. A bit like looking at tree rings, you can actually count these back through time.
12 candidate sites were selected for that golden spike. One will be chosen. One of them is right here, Crawford Lake, in southern Ontario, Canada.
We do have the best site.
We're not biased, and I have to accept some kind of maternal pride.
Francine McCarthy has reason to be proud. Crawford Lake has been recording human activities for thousands of years. That's because it's very deep, and its bottom sediments are permanently isolated. Those sediments consist of many layers laid down year after year. Varves, they're called.
Our varves are, they're like fingerprints.
And those varves can be dated precisely.
With the Anthropocene, because we're looking at the mid-20th century as a starting date, plus or minus is not satisfactory. If I tell you that that's 1935, it's 1935, and it's not 1936, it's not 1934, it is 1935.
The most crucial layers in Crawford Lake's sediments were deposited in the mid-20th century. The Anthropocene Working Group has already decided that Earth's new age began then, when fossil fuel burning, resource use, consumerism, and pollution shifted into high gear all around the planet. Topping its list of human signatures, radioactive plutonium from atmospheric nuclear weapons testing that peaked in the 1950s, Crawford Lake sediments record the history of fossil fuel burning, and its plutonium record is textbook.
If you ask someone to model what you would see in a sediment record based on the record of how many nuclear tests were being conducted in any given year, it would look precisely like the record at Crawford Lake.
As Francine McCarthy and her colleagues prepare to announce their choice for the Anthropocene's Golden Spike, other geologists are skeptical that the Holocene epoch is over and the Anthropocene has begun.
It suggests that nothing was happening, and then all of a sudden everything was happening. And this is not true.
Phil Gibbard is a geologist at Cambridge University. Human impacts didn't begin in the mid-20th century, Gibbard says. They've been going on for thousands of years.
The truth is that actually human activity began 40,000 years ago and possibly earlier.
Phil Gibbard's biggest problem with the Anthropocene? It only started 70 years ago.
In geological terms, that's today. It's just yesterday morning. We have no clue about, seen from thousands of years in the future, whether this will be more than a blip.
Only time will tell if the Anthropocene is a blip, says Simon Turner, as he inspects time-traveling objects of the misanthropocene. In the meantime, Turner says, the Anthropocene idea has mobilized public attention.
The thing with the Anthropocene, people get it. They get the idea of like human activity on the planet. The Holocene, I could probably pull someone over here now and say, have you heard of the Holocene? And they will not have heard of it. Unless, and geology is just down the corner, so you'd hope someone has.
Of all the things people get about the Anthropocene, it's fossilized chicken bones.
So this is the chicken bones here, I think.
Yeah, Gallus domesticus. Once the most common domestic animal on Earth, the chicken is now extinct. They were farmed in factory prisons ruled by an infamous pecking order.
If you're going to think about fossilized remains of the biosphere in a million years' time, then domestic animals are probably going to be a regular occurrence in the stratigraphic record. So thinking about how chicken bones would be preserved and probably in quite concentrated numbers sometimes.
The Anthropocene Working Group will announce its choice for the Anthropocene's Golden Spike sometime this summer or in the early fall. Stay tuned. We'll post a few pictures of time-traveling objects of the misanthropocene at greenplanetmonitor.net, along with links to the work of the Anthropocene Working Group. You are listening to the Green Planet Monitor. If you're appreciating what you're hearing, go to greenplanetmonitor.net and subscribe or donate, or both. With your generous help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Human knowledge, the Anthropocene idea has an epistemology, a dizzying variety of epistemologies, actually, advocated by numerous epistemic communities. Epistemology is the philosophy of knowledge, what we know and how we know it, what constitutes knowledge, and the not-so-fine distinctions between knowledge, ideas, and opinions. Ava Horn unpacks the epistemology of the Anthropocene at the University of Vienna.
Hi, my name is Ava Horn. I'm a professor of modern German literature at the German department of the University of Vienna, and I'm also the founder of the Vienna Anthropocene Network, which is an interdisciplinary network to bring together scholars from many different fields interested in the Anthropocene. In 2014, I published a book on modern catastrophe imaginary. I was talking about the end of the 18th century and walked my way through into the present. And the term I came across was the Anthropocene. Jan Zalashevich's book starts with an imagination after human civilization, and then these alien archaeologists land on Earth and they see the signs, the layer in the crust of the Earth of a huge catastrophe. And that's humanity. Human civilization over 5,000 years brings about a catastrophe that's particularly fast by geological standards. And this is how I got interested in the term. And then I started working on it, about it, and then friends asked me, because we had a New Year's Eve fight about the term, and somebody says, I don't believe in the Anthropocene, this is bullshit, and I tried to convey, you know, what's the content. Because a lot of people do not really understand the term. They say it's anthropocentric because anthropos is in the term, and there's a lot of resistance to alleged implications of the term that are not really implied in the debate when you look at it a little bit harder. When the term started being established, humanity scholars and social science scholars said it unifies mankind to one player, to one species, but no species is more diverse than mankind, especially when it comes to their ecological footprint, right? We have rich and poor, and the poor don't have that much of a footprint, and the rich have an immense footprint. So we cannot talk about anthropos as one single species and unify the term. We need to look about structures, economical inequality, lifestyles, etc. We need to diversify the notion of mankind.
Zurich, 23, Citibank.
$350 Swiss.
As a humanities scholar, I see myself as the other side of the thing. You know, the other side of thinking about the Anthropocene from the standpoint not of of Earth system sciences or climatology or the physics of the oceans and the chemistry of the oceans, but as like, what are the cultural, historical, political, social dynamics that lead up and feed into the crisis that the Anthropocene term stands for? I believe this is really the other side, where two complementary halves of an approach of what we have in modern academia to tackle the problem, to understand the problem. So we need both sides. When you're in the humanities, you always try to narrate a certain development, to create a story on one aspect. So you can talk about agriculture, you can talk about colonialism, you can talk about the beginning and the transition to fossil fuels. Each of these stories would be one story leading up to the Anthropocene, but it's very specific. That's what humanities scholars do. Or social scientists would look at economies of societies of affluence as opposed to societies of subsistence. And how do they, for instance, do agriculture use certain resources, etc.? For us, it's telling the stories that led to the Anthropocene, to this mega crisis, this ecological planetary crisis that the Anthropocene term stands for, and try to understand, try to point at the mechanisms. And then philosophers, who are also humanities scholars or political science people, they would look at the ethical implications, for instance. How does this affect our relation to the future? What is our responsibility towards future generations? This is more a philosophical question. Political scientists would ask, what are the political forms that led up to the Anthropocene? And what could the political structures that we need to get a grip on that problem? Epistemology is the science of asking how we gain knowledge and what is the structure of that knowledge. So if we think about an epistemology of the Anthropocene, that would essentially be the question, how do we know something about the Anthropocene? What, for instance, is our notion of nature? What is our notion of planetary processes? As you know, our notion of what the planet really is and how nature on a planetary scale functions has changed dramatically within the 20th century, with firstly Lovelock and Margulis's Gaia hypothesis. We are thinking not about nature as in natural balance or something, but as a self-regulating system. And we have to look at that system both from a macro scale, planetary scale, and from a micro scale, which was Margulis' contribution, a microbiological scale. Essentially, Lovelock's model of Gaia gives birth to a whole new multidisciplinary approach to the mechanisms on the planet, which is Earth system sciences. And it's not geology, it's Earth system sciences that gave birth to that term. One thing that is very, very important to understand from science-based standpoint is that humans are not at all something like the dominating species. Humanity scholars tend to think that. No, not true. Humanity is a species that all of a sudden plays a role, is an influence, which not all species are, right? So we're not at all dominating anything, especially not the Earth system. We have become a destabilizing factor within a system that is much greater than us and that will clearly survive humankind in a different state of the system. If we were dominating, it would be much easier if we really had control over what we're doing. It would be much easier to, you know, counterbalance our impact. But we have no control because the system is so much bigger than us. What I find interesting is looking at the similarities but also differences between, for instance, the late 18th century, early 19th century understanding of nature and what we have today. Men dominating nature is a very short-lived idea that essentially comes up in the 19th century and disappears in the 20th century. for a very long time, humans were crazy afraid of nature. They found nature overwhelming. Nature was the expression of God's might, or also the grace that God bestows upon humans. You know, when it rains and you have a dry summer, the rain coming down is like an embodiment of divine grace. But in the 19th century, and that tellingly coincides with the use of fossil fuels, with the industrialization, also with technological and scientific breakthroughs in the 19th century, all of a sudden you have discourses like men dominating the earth, being able to technologically control the earth. And then also the idea, specifically in the American version of conservationism, with Perkins Marsh, for instance, that nature needs protection from humans. Before, in the 17th century, humans needed protection from nature, right? In the 19th century, all of a sudden, humans, certain humans in the Occident, believe they are above nature and they can control nature. The Asian take on nature is much more disaster oriented. When you look at Japanese texts, we just had a catastrophe, so when is the next catastrophe happening? So they're much more attuned to a nature that can be artificially harmonized, but that always will beat back and strike back in terms of catastrophic instability. Normally, an epoch, a geochronological epoch, gets ratified about 12,000 years later, after it began. Now, what they are trying is to describe the present, not the Earth past, but what's happening after 1950. Like, what, 70 years? No, we don't do that. We do 2 billion years. We can talk about that. I think with human impact on the layers of the earth and the attempt to describe this properly, you really blur the lines between archaeology, which is finding human artifacts, and geology. And you look at totally different things. Before it was pottery and skulls and jewels, and now we look at concrete, nuclear fallout, aluminum, styrofoam. There is currently, I don't belong to that strain of thinkers, and I'm not even sure whether I'm that interested in this type of thought, but there is the transhumanist movement or philosophical approach to the present, saying that humans clearly have created a new form of almost self-organizing non-living life that would be technology. Some theorists of the Anthropocene have proposed the term technosphere as one additional sphere to the other spheres of the planetary system, like atmosphere, hydrosphere, lithosphere, etc. Now they say, okay, there's biosphere and biosphere, through the human species specifically, gives birth to a new form of life, which is anorganic, and that would be technology, especially digitalized technology, machines talking to machines, right? So the transhumanist movement thinks about a self-transcending of humans in terms of transcending their own biological limits. How can we hack the body, but also how can we hybridize artificial intelligence and human bodies, human thought, technologically enhanced humans. It all comes down to, can machines build machines? Can machines reproduce like we reproduce? Maybe we're going in this direction, self-reproducing machines. This is when you really have an organic life. Honestly, I believe it's not about a new description of the world. It's about organizing the world differently and getting out of this 19th century, 1920th century path of ever-growing capitalism, ever-growing technology, self-transcending humans through machines and artificial intelligence. I think this is really the wrong way. We need to have a new understanding of nature. The ontologists would say, yeah, this is exactly what we're providing. I don't need a new ontology to, you know, I don't think a new ontology will help us stop climate change. I don't think a new ontology will help us communicate amongst the many different players involved in what's going on right now in terms of the ecological crisis, to come together, to convene, to a coordinated transition to a different type of economic behavior. We don't need a new ontology for that. If we ratify the Anthropocene as a new geochronological epoch, this is really science news. Will it change humans' willingness to come to better climate agreements? I don't think so. I would be very happy if this happens. I'm all for it. And nevertheless, this is a scientific achievement. And just, you may think I'm switching topics here, but think of climatology. Think of climate sciences of the past 30 years. They knew everything. They had robust facts and tables and forecasts and whatnot, and nobody listened to them. You know, you can have all sorts of scientific findings that are brilliant, and still policymakers will say, oh, we still don't have a consensus. We just don't want to hear that. You know, so the question is, will any mind change by this finding? I don't think so. We need to introduce what we know already into the political process. That's why we have these great people from the Last Generation and Extinction Rebellion who glue themselves on the tarmac of the Berlin airport. Great, yes, go ahead. Everybody is totally, you know, scandalized. They're like, how dare they do that? I mean, they're just drawing attention to a problem that's really there, and they're getting impatient. And I think this is great. This is really great. We need to get more impatient.
Eva Horn is a professor of modern German literature in the German department of the University of Vienna and the founder of the Vienna Anthropocene Network. University of Vienna geologist Michael Wagreich has helped out. Wagreich is a member of the Anthropocene Working Group. Sometime this summer, Wagreich and his colleagues will present their proposal for how the Anthropocene should be defined geologically. Read more about their work and epistemologies of the Anthropocene at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. For $5 or more, you'll be helping to make this podcast happen. You are listening to the Green Planet Monitor, a listener-supported podcast with a certain epistemology of its own. I'm David Kattenberg. many analyses of the Anthropocene today, none are more fascinating than the role of complexity, the idea that as human societies develop, they get increasingly complicated, tied together and dependent on connections and systems that